Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
Everyone. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to the Power of Poetics. I'd like to say welcome again to all of our guests from around the world. Tonight, we're extremely excited to have with us Catfish McDarris. He's a world-renowned poet, and I'm so glad to have an opportunity to talk with him and learn more about him. And tonight is his time to share his works. Mr. McDarris, are you with us?
Yeah, I am, Michael. How's it going out there in Washington, D.C.? Seen President Obama today or anything?
Yes, he and I are close personal friends, and okay. Things are going well. And welcome to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Again, your background, your talent, your skills are renowned throughout the world, and we're just glad that you're here.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's good to be here. I hear I got a lot of friends on the phone. And,
yes, you do. Yes, you do.
We should have
That's
a pretty
great.
Good read here. What you want to do
I think
first?
So. Well, one thing that I'd like to share, one of the things that I share every week as we begin this journey, is that each week we travel through the power of poetry to places that only our imaginations can build. We visit the good, bad, and indifferent of our lives. And through our poetic journey, we hopefully will find comfort, solace, peace, truth, and celebration in our words. And our motto is, long live words. So what I'd like to do is to open the line to a number of different callers, and then we'll give you an opportunity to share. I'll also share your biography, and then we'll just begin this journey of your poetic experiences, okay?
Sounds great, Michael.
Fantastic. Hold on 1 second here. Again, we have a number of callers, so this is absolutely fantastic. Fantastic, fantastic. We have a caller from area code 310. We have a caller from area code 404. We have a caller from area code 203-256 and 744. So, again, we've got a lot of people here. Catfish, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Based on all of your experiences, who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
I'm nobody.
A nobody.
I'm just another guy, man. Just taking up space in the universe.
Taking up space in the universe. Okay. Tell us more. Then I'll read what you have here officially.
Hello?
Hello? Yes. Tell
yeah,
us more.
Yeah, you still there, man?
Yes, we're here. Tell
okay.
us more.
Oh, tell you more?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. Lately, I got a new book out called No Blindfold, No Cigarette from New Jersey. Got another one coming out real soon from England. It's called... My heart is a roaring lion in a cage, and I have another one coming out from Texas. It's called Eight Naked Serial Killers in a Volkswagen, and I've done about 25, 30 chap books, got collected at Marquette University a couple years back. I don't do much reading anymore. I'm getting too old and ugly. My hair's falling out. This is kind of
right.
cool, though, reading on the phone, because you can do it in your pajamas.
Very much so. What I'd like to do is to share just briefly some of the other aspects of your life that you've shared with me, that, again, you know, you were born in 1953. You are an American poet and author who's often been associated with Allen Ginsberg. You've been notable yeah. for collaborating with Charles Bukowski. Am I correct?
Yeah. I got to know Ginsberg and Burroughs through the mail not long before they died. I think Burroughs about 4 months before he died and then Ginsberg about 8 months. And we traded letters and they sent me some autographed books. and stuff. I never met him in person. Bukowski I met through Jack Michelin, who was a great street poet, and he had some Bukowski unpublished poems. And about, I think it was 97, 98, we put together a three-way chapbook called Prying with Bukowski, Michelin, and me. And I was kind of related to Bukowski because we were both postal workers. He made it 14 years, and I made it 34. And wow. I did a lot of traveling. I never lived in a box in Philadelphia, but I lived in a cave up in the New Mexican Jemez Mountains. I lived in a Chevrolet Impala in Denver. And I did a lot of hitchhiking, riding freight trains. Spent a summer mostly sand shark fishing down in Mexico. Worked in a zinc smelter. Worked as a bricklayer most of my life. A roofer. Finally got in the post office because I was a artilleryman shooting cannons for 3 years. I got an honorable discharge, and that helped me with a test on the postal exam. So after I got married, I've been married 32 years. After I got married, I figured I needed a better, steadier job. So I got in at the post office here in Milwaukee, and was able to keep writing. Yeah.
I want to ask you this question. I mean, your history is just so full of different information, chock full of information. Your nom de plume, Catfish, how did that come about?
Okay, I was sending stuff out back in the day, and I kind of met this Indian guy down in Indiana, and his name was Low Dog Dave Reeve, and he published Bukowski all the time. And I told him, man, I said, I really hate the post office. And I wanted to start a catfish farm because there's so many reelers here in Milwaukee. And I was going to get a big industrial building and start a catfish farm. And he started calling me Catfish. And that's how that name got hung on me. I've had nicknames all my life, though. It seems like I go from one nickname to another.
Well, this one seems to have stuck. Let's open up the line. Yeah. Call some of your friends from around the world. And we'll go and we'll start it in terms of your poetry. Area code 310.
Hello.
Yes,
hello.
Area code 310.
Yes, hello.
Yeah,
yes.
Who are you?
Are you back?
Yes.
Who am I or how am I?
How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Hey, Kat.
Who are you?
Alexis Fancher. Rome,
oh,
Kat.
Alexis, okay.
Right.
Yeah, this
welcome,
is my
welcome.
Good buddy out in Los Angeles.
All right. Area code 404.
404, huh?
Yes.
This
from Georgia.
This is Russell from Atlanta. Hey, Catfish.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, when are you going to come by my saloon sometime?
Where are you going to come where?
When are you going to submit some stuff to my saloon sometime?
Russell? Oh, this is Russell, man. Hey, sometime soon, man. I'm loving your photographs, man.
All right.
Thanks.
Yeah, man.
You got
how's your mom? When your mom's still living in Milwaukee?
Yep. You're going to come up and visit, I think, later in the summertime.
Okay.
All right,
sounds
great.
Good, man. You
got a couple more people. Hold on. It's a family reunion. Hold on. Area code 203.
Catfish.
Yeah. Who's 203?
Who do you think 203 is, Catfish? This is Doug. How are you, my man?
Doug?
Yeah, Doug Mathewson, back in Connecticut. Hi, Alexis.
Hey, Doug. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Let's start our own show. We'll leave this boy Catfish behind. What do you think?
It's a deal. You got it.
Yeah, it's a deal.
That's great.
All right, we'll give him a break, though. We'll see how he makes out.
Area code 256. You're on the air.
What's happening, man? Wing
hello,
dog.
Hello, Wing Dog. How are you, Wing Dog? He's part of my family.
Good.
Wing Dog, my poetic family. Wing Dog, welcome. We've got area code 571. I think she may be a listener.
Anastasia.
Hello, Anastasia. She's a part of the DC Poetry Project. We've got area code Bunbury.magazine.
Hello.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the DC Poetry Project with our special guest, Catfish McDarris. And we've got one more. Wow, this is a full night. Area code 414.
Hi, this is Amy Terry. I'm the head of special collections at Marquette University, where we collect just poetry.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, welcome to the show. All right. Well, hold on 1 second. We're going to get set here. We'll come back in 30 seconds with Catfish McDarris.
All right.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. This is The Power of Poetics. The call-in number is 646-716-8754. We're here with our very special guest, Mr. Catfish McDarris. He has a number of people here from his poetic family to listen to him share his words, as also hopefully to share theirs. So, Catfish, let's start with the poem. Please grace us with the poem.
Okay. They worked. The hunter was intent, staring down the barrel of his rifle at the biggest trophy buck he'd seen. Taking a deep breath, he took up the slack on the trigger. Aiming for the heart, he squeezed gently, only to hear click, click, click. The deer bounded into the forest. Unloading his gun, the frustrated hunter discovered he'd loaded a roll of lifesavers.
Okay. He had loaded a roll of lifesavers.
Instead of a shotgun shell. I told you they worked, man.
I see. Okay. I don't know what to say.
I don't know what to make of that one, huh? That was in the Dada writing down in New York City. Nice mag last year. Okay, this one's
All
called
right.
the In. This one's called The Entire Enchilada. Benito sat in the kitchen, reading his taco-splattered copy of Bukowski. He was pissed off because his sister, Pilar, was running with some lowriders. Getting up, he washed the dishes and went in the bathroom and checked his tattoo of the Virgin of Guadalupe in the mirror. Pilar's bra hung from the shower rod. He tried it on and smiled, but it didn't fit. Benito had just got out of prison. He did 6 years for car theft. He took the bra and threw it out the window. The phone rang, but he didn't answer, figuring it was for Pilar. The doorbell rang. He ignored that, too. Lying on the couch, he studied the ceiling. Pilar had painted a mural of the life of Frida Kahlo. She had talent, looks, and intelligence, but he doubted if she would escape the barrio. Benito heard gunshots outside the window. He investigated. Two soul brothers were bleeding heavily on the sidewalk. He closed the curtains. He listened to the sirens and went to sleep, dreaming of his beautiful third-grade teacher. Man, that was quiet, huh? Okay.
When did you first start writing, Catfish?
About 30 years ago.
Talk about that. What were some of the incidents in your life that made you want to be a writer, to be a poet? What inspired you?
I like Louis L'Amour. First thing I ever wrote was a Western, and it never got published, though. But I used to read a lot, you know, read Steinbeck, Hemingway, Zola, Dostoevsky, all that stuff. And I just, you know, I just thought, hey, if these dudes can do it, so can I. Of course, I never got quite as good as they did. But I'd like to read one more, and then maybe we ask our readers, Christopher and Carrie, to read from England, because it's a lot. It's really late over there, and they got to go to work, and they probably need to get some sleep.
Right.
Uh-oh. Sounds like my cat's going to join us. This is a rhyming poem, which I hardly ever write rhyme. And this one was for a Lawrence Ferlinghetti tribute. It's called What We Drive in America is How We Roll. In the land of Edgar Allan Poe, Johnny Appleseed and Geronimo, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis and Liberace, Budweiser, Jack Daniels and Old Milwaukee, Alcatraz, Smoky Mountains and the Statue of Liberty, home of the greedy, nothing for free. Buy a Chevy, Ford, Cadillac or a Buick. Get a mortgage, school loan, be another happy puke. We open our wallets, hearts and arms. In the blink of an eye, no more Lucky Charms. Go to Disneyland, Las Vegas, more money, less fun. Into chopped liver, the time clock gets everyone. With a blindfold and cig, we wait at the wall. Justice, freedom, big brother watching us all. Invest in America, not foreign cars, gas and oil. The unions are fading, to the rich go the spoils. Their pockets get filled, the wealthy exploit. It's not too late if you buy your car from Detroit.
All right, it's not too late if you buy your car from Detroit. All right. And as you said, because we have some international callers, please just give them an opportunity to share their work. Please, who'd like to go first?
I'd like to go first, I think. I'm Carrie.
Okay.
Nice to meet you all.
Hey, Carrie.
Oh, hello.
Hey. I'm going to read a poem called Seb tonight. It's about a friend of mine who sadly passed. He was quite young. He was 28. It's called Seb. You never had stars in your eyes. You had galaxies. Glinting supernovas of pure ambition shot through with warm mischief. I found your number in an old notebook a little while ago now. I thought about dialing it just to see if I could hear your voice through time and space. I think about you often, not as you were in the last pictures, cooped up cold in a blue police public call box that we all know isn't bigger on the inside, but as you were. My friend who burned bright and burned out.
Very good.
Thank
wow.
you. He was a massive Doctor Who fan, and all the coffin bearers were dressed as different doctors from Doctor Who.
Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Very powerful.
You know, when
Thank
I watch...
sharing.
Hey, when I watch British movies, I have to put on English subtitles. That's how bad I am. Serious.
All right.
That's terrible.
All right.
Huh?
Who'd like to go next on the power of poetics? Who'd like to go next?
My name's Christopher Moriarty. Very nice to meet you all again.
Hello, Christopher. Welcome.
Hello, Christopher.
As Catfish said, we are publishing one of his collections, My Heart is a Roaring Lion in a Cage. We've been reading his poems for the last couple of months or so, and it's just been such a pleasure to hear him read them actually in the flesh, as it were, out loud. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, Christopher.
Catfish.
No
incredible.
Problem. Yeah, he's an absolutely fantastic poet. I'm a massive Bukowski fan as well, so it's just been an absolute pleasure for us to work with him thus far. I've got a quick poem. I wrote it as a Valentine's poem to the beautiful Kerry sat next to me here. And this is my sort of interpretation of a romantic poem. It's called Good Night. Good night, world. They are turning off the lights now. The roads have been taken in for the night. Travel is impossible. Unless, of course, you hitchhike on the astral highway. We here took a trip down that dusty road once. We saw ebbing mountains tiding and breaking against intangible concepts of buildings that had not yet been built. We saw the sky weep. Not rain, it never rains. It was weeping with anguished joys for all those who had passed, those who may yet but never yet be. In the distance, in a parting between those fluctuating mountains, we saw an infinite boulangerie, selling nothing but soft toy representations of the great yawn, which, of course, as we all know, is the process through which everything will be returned to its component atoms. We held hands, smiled at those toys, and bought three of them.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Good job.
Share with us some more about your inspiration for that particular piece.
I genuinely do not know. I've been this year, since the 1st of January, I've been writing a poem every single day, and I've found that they've been becoming increasingly more strange as I've sort of run out of important things to say. So I've just been sitting down with a piece of paper and...
Well, you've been literally waxing lyrical, haven't you?
Basically, yeah. I've got another 7 months to go and I'm already halfway around the bend.
Well, you know, one of the things that I believe, you know, April is National Poetry Month here in the U.S., and it's so important to have an opportunity to express yourself. One way is through the power of poetry, which is extremely important. So, again, I'd like to say thank you for joining us. I mean, being able to lift the pen to write and to share is so important. So important.
Well, we have a blog, and whereas Chris has decided to go the whole hog and do the year's worth, I'm doing the National Poetry Month as well. I'm currently in the middle of that.
And okay, we are absolutely behind sort of grassroots writing. We run Bunbury Magazine, which we've had the pleasure of publishing Catfishing as well, and we've had a hell of a lot of young writers coming in. In the next issue, we've got a writer who's 14 years old, who we've worked with extensively. He's got an incredible maturity in his writing already, and we're helping him sculpt the way he goes with what he's doing. And it's a pleasure working with people like that. And as you say...
Forging a path.
Yeah, exactly. Picking up the pen and actually getting something down and expressing yourself is one of the most important things we have as human beings.
And brave things.
Yeah.
Very much so. I think it's so important to metaphorically scream, and poetry allows you to do that. Who else would like to share?
It was an honor to hear you, Christopher and Carrie. I loved your poems, okay? Thanks, you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to sign off now because, as you say, it's very late, but enjoy the rest of the show. Take care, everyone.
All right.
Good night, Christopher. Good night, Carrie.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. All right. Who else would like to share on this poetic journey tonight as we celebrate Catfish and his work? Who else would like to share?
I'll do one from Atlanta here.
And your name is again?
Is Russell.
All right, great. Please, you're on.
All right, GPS. GPS malfunctions, and before the bosses can reach the reset key, the world turns upside down. The Staten Island ferry docks in Puget Sound. The pyramids show up in Omaha. The Dead Sea teams again with Gil and Finn. Palmyra rises from the waste. The muezzin calls to prayer for the minaret of Jam. The hanging gardens bloom, the lost tribes return, east meets west. And all 7 billion of us, with mouths agape, turn in circles right to left, with sand on our feet amazed, strangers in an unmapped state of wonder.
Sounds good, Russell.
Thanks, Fish.
Hey, man.
Tell us more,
everybody,
Russell,
should
about your...
Everybody should try Camel Saloon, Russell's... magazine. It's excellent. Photographs are out of this world, man. His especially.
Well, Russell, tell us about the genesis of Camel Saloon.
Well, I had been published by a lot of people on the internet over the years, and about 6 years ago, I was sitting in the corner of a bar, and I decided I should open up my own online poetry journal, and because I was in a bar, I decided to create an online poetry bar, the world's original online poetry bar, the Camel Saloon. So it's intended to be a place for free expression. The regulars are welcome, and it's been 6 years now, several hundred thousand page views, and publishing from 35 or 40 countries around the world.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Great. Who else would like to share? And then we'll go back to Catfish.
Okay, thanks, Russell.
Hi, I'm Alexis Bonfancher out in Los Angeles. I'd like
Hello,
to share
Alexis.
A poem.
Please.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Alexis.
Hi, Alexis.
Hey.
I call her Mustang Sally.
It's a long story. A long story.
All right, then. All right.
This one is called Stiletto Killer. I'm quoting CNN here at the beginning. It may have been a vicious murder or the unintentional result of a lover's quarrel. Either way, the death of a Texas college professor stands out for the weapon the killer allegedly used, one of her own stilettos. She told me if anybody screwed with her, they'd get a stiletto heel in the eye, her former apartment manager told the TV news. Okay. Alf and Anna drank tequila at the club until closing. Anna wore a tight green dress. Alf said she looked like a whore. Back at the apartment, the neighbors heard screams. The defense will prove she was a battered woman, her lawyer told the press. She was too short when the stilettos came off, but her feet ached. She had to stand on tiptoe to reach him, for Christ's sake. Women are always losers in Texas, Anna alleged. He cursed in Swedish when he beat me. She'd read Swedes beat their women in The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. In the early morning hours, Anna stabbed her lover 31 times. The stiletto heel fused to her fist. When the police arrived, Anna was covered in blood. In that green dress, she looked like Christmas.
Nice. Nice.
Very good, man. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You.
The imagery.
Yeah, what's under
incredible.
The tree?
Yes, the imagery is incredible. Thank you, Alex. All right.
You're welcome.
One more? One more before Catfish? Anyone?
I'll do one. This is Doug Mathewson in Connecticut.
Oh, Doug.
Howdy. How you doing, Brother Cat?
Good, man. I thought you'd sound like a New England guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I am. And what can I tell you? You know, live in Connecticut, read the New York Times, vote Republican, drive a Volvo. I mean, what more do you want? You know, you want credentials, there you go. Anyway, moving on here. Let's just do this for fun. People are such shit, my sister screamed as she overarmed her phone against the wall. There's just so much of the good stuff to go around, said her boyfriend, the Archangel Gabriel. His voice was muffled by his wings. As lantern raised, he peered into the fridge. She bitterly resented being lectured, by immortals most of all, and I hated it when he and she fought. He only created so much soul back then, omnipotent or otherwise. No one could have anticipated the demand, said Gabe. And with fierce hand gestures and a scolding voice, my sister went on and on and on about whatever. And all I could hear was Laurie Anderson singing, Oh, Daddy, Daddy, it's just like you said, now that the living outnumber the dead. All right, it's short.
Go on. I like
all right.
Too.
Now
all right, back
the living
to the cat.
Outnumber the dead. Wow.
That's right. It's the idea that there's a finite amount of soul, and if you keep dividing it up, you keep splitting the piece of pie finer and finer and finer, people don't end up with a lot.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a rumor here we're going to hear Catfish read something.
Yes, we are.
You want another one, or you want, Michael, you want to read
one?
Hold on,
Catfish. Yes, hold on, Catfish. We'll be right back. Just a little break, and we'll come right back. But Catfish McDars. We are back. My name is Michael Ingram. I'm with the DC Poetry Project as well as the host here of the Power Poetics. The call-in number is 646-716-8754. We're here with our very special guest, Mr. Catfish McDars. Catfish, you're on. Please share some of your work.
Hey, you want to read one, Michael?
Okay, I guess I can. This is thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. All right, all right.
Of course.
This is called War is a Poetic Duet. So that's War is a Poetic Duet. And it's also, Alex, based on CNN, kind of. 6 o'clock p.m., helicopter fire, machine guns, bombing or near-bus random gunfire, rocket-propelled grenades. I feel anxiety starting. Bomb thrown by a fellow U.S. soldier. Soldier drowned in a canal today. Another non-hostile vehicle accident. I can't breathe. Truck bombs. A tank fell into the river during combat operations. I feel shaky and desperate and like there's nothing I can do and things will never get better. 6 o'clock. 6:05. 6:05 p.m. CBS discovers burnt bodies, executed, tortured, a mortar round suicide truck bomb, a number of severed heads, explosives detonating. I can't scream. I don't know how to scream. I can't scream. I don't know how to scream. I feel choked by my own hands. Soldiers ambushed by enemy fire, rockets, mortars, 50 bodies found in a ravine, another car bomb, suicide bombers kill and wound hundreds. Death squads accelerated their massacre of women and children. 6:10 p.m. I can smell the mass graves that mark lost dreams, lost childhoods, marriages, friends, lost hopes. Immediately after the attack, thousands of mutilated bodies dumped around the Capitol. CNN, breaking news, 200 bodies found today in a ravine. I taste their blood. The number of non-hostile vehicle accidents increased this week. 6:15 p.m. I no longer cry. No time to whisper goodbye to the unknown warriors. Automatic weapons used against insurgents leave hundreds dead. Helicopter fire, helicopter crash, helicopter... I feel numbed by the numbers of human mountains being climbed to conquer like the Himalayas. 6:20 p.m. The executed were found bound and shot with the machine guns. Death becomes another day in the trench. I sit exhausted with no energy or real desire to curl a fist in protest. The wave of anxiety is killing me. Why has it come to this? Why today? Today was a good day. I just don't understand. 6:25 p.m. The cost of war has grown into the trillions. American soldiers are committing suicides at rapidly growing rate. Wait, my panting breath still cannot be heard by anyone. Can you hear me, anyone? 6:29 p.m., breaking news on NBC. A little brown and fuzzy puppy who had been lost in his way was returned home to his rightful owner by a kind passerby. My anxiety has passed. Thank God. It turned out to be a good day, after all.
Mm-hmm. Wow, man.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That was intense, man. I like that one.
Well, to me,
it
just
sad,
symbolizes how things change, where when you watch the daily news, there's so much drama and chaos, but then they'll introduce a public interest story where they found a puppy or a dog as if that takes as if that changes everything, and that brings people out of that sense of despair.
And sometimes it does, but sometimes it doesn't, because so much is happening in the world.
That's right, man. A lot of times it seems like if it's not happening in your country, people just, you know, pull the covers over their head and try to forget about it. And they say, oh, yeah, but there's a little puppy. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, you got all somebody right, else out there want to read, or you want me to hit it a couple times?
I think I'd like you to hit it a couple of times. Catfish
okay, McCoy. Since you're in Washington, D.C., I'm going to read one. It was my campaign poem a few years ago when I decided to run for president. It's called Fish for Prez. If elected, I will split a cheeseburger with God, drink a brewski with Buddha, kiss Jesus on the lips, make churches pay taxes, feed the hungry, house the homeless, put a chicken in every pot, put pot in every chick, put O.J. in a cell with Manson, make Stairway to Heaven our national anthem, put Jerry Garcia's face on our flag, make the Spanish fly our national bird, paint better than Picasso and Van Gogh, jam better than Jimmy and Jaco Pastorius, dance with Fred Astaire and James Brown on the ceiling, erase racism, erase hate, stop greed, stop crime, stop cutting down trees, outlaw clocks, stop madness, take a vow of poverty. I inhale, I do not grovel, lie or swallow, or drive up dirt roads. Send $20 today to 1-800-CATFISH. Let me get my finger on the button, and no, Jesus did not slip me the tongue. Anybody want to vote for that?
Maybe behind closed doors, baby.
All right. Here's one from my. Here's one from my smoke. This one's. Oh, where's Amy at? Amy hadn't read.
Oh, I'm not reading.
Come on, Amy.
I don't have one to read, honestly.
Come on. Okay, I forgot about Amy, man. She's right here in town with me.
Now, I didn't know I was going to be called on to read, but I will say that. It's delightful to hear these poems and Catfish's collection at the Marquette Special Collections is a real treasure. It's a wonderful thing. So I'm thoroughly enjoying getting to know the poetry through Catfish.
Let me ask this question, Amy. How did it come about that Catfish has a collection at Marquette?
Well, he had worked for Marquette some years back, and he was looking for a place, as I will say any poet should. He was considering where to place his papers, or where to put his collection, and he contacted me, and I was very fortunate that, I was in a position to say, yes, we would love to collect this. One of the interesting things, I think, about collecting Catfish is that not only is he widely published, and so there's a large collection of cat books and zines and journals and things, but he's widely published on the Internet, and that, for archivists, is a real challenge, because this is where so much dynamic and creative work is going on. It's just introduced me to an entirely new way of collecting an author's body of work. So, hats off to you, Catfish.
Thanks, Amy.
Yeah, it's
all right.
Great.
You're back on.
Okay.
Catfish.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. This one's back to when I was a bad guy. This one's called Smoked Sardines. I kept feeding my M79 grenade launcher, first knockout gas, then white phosphorus, followed by high explosive, popping smoke to hide my activities. I had to hand it to the armed car boys. They were a feisty lot. The tin can was bound to give up its sardines. My cell phone went off, and it was my grandma. She said, "Honey, come home. The clearinghouse folks are on the porch with a $7 million check made out to you. I could hear the police sirens calling my name, among other things. Okay. Okay, here. This one's going to get a rise. This is one I always tried out on Thanksgiving. It's called Thanksgiving Can Be a Real Mofo. I didn't say the whole word there, okay? It says, my lady was withdrawing $60 from the drive-up ATM machine. I was tuning in Steely Dan, a Nixon mask person with a revved-up chainsaw cut off her extended arm and grabbed it and all the money. Ripping my belt from my trousers, I made a tourniquet. Next thing I knew, I was on the floor in a store. A circle of frozen turkeys were shooting dice with tiny hands. Several had cigars puffing from their neck hole. They were cursing in Turkish, sounding ticked off and flipping each other the bird. Looking around, I noticed I was naked. I had a cell phone. I dialed 911. The operator asked, what is your emergency? All I could say was, gobble, gobble, gobble. Waking in a pool of sweat, I saw a full bottle of 101 proof whiskey. Wild turkey. To scratch my testicles, I trotted for the bathroom to discover two tiny plucked butterballs. I thought, this is worse than naked lunch.
Oh, cat.
Oh, catfish.
That catfish, yeah.
That one always comes out of
catfish. Hey, catfish, I just received a tweet. And
okay.
This is from someone. Wow, this is from someone in Portland, Oregon, actually. They'd like to know, do you sit and think through every word of every stanza, or do you just write freely and allow the words to flow?
I just let them flow, or I stop, do stanzas. Man, I can do it all, man. Haiku. You know, there's no set way to write. The worst way I wrote a poem one day was I was in the grocery store, and I always keep a pen in my pocket because I was a postal clerk for 30-something years. Anyway, I didn't have any paper with me because I'd already wrote a poem. So I saw this guy, and he was yelling into this pink cell phone. And he was yelling and yelling and yelling, man. And I was getting a vibe from him, and he had some kind of weird star fruit or something. I don't know what the heck it was. Anyway, a chayote or some kind of weird fruit, and he was looking at it and yelling and trying to find out what he was supposed to get. I grabbed this box of Kool-Aid, and I ripped it open, and the Kool-Aid packets went flying, and I just started writing this poem out about this guy, you know, on the insides of the Kool-Aid box, and before I know it, man, I had a nice poem there. That was probably the hardest one I got. I mean, you hear about people writing on napkins and paper towels and, you know, everything, matchbooks, stuff like that. I think somebody even wrote a book on 7 postage stamps. I think it might have been a novella, though. But anyway, man, that was one of the times that I was just like, man, it hit me, man, that poem. Okay, anybody else want to read, or you want me to read some more? I got some new stuff here.
Okay,
let me
ask one question first. I guess for the rest of you, do you allow your poetry to just flow, or it's based on, you know, the form and style and the mechanics, or it's just primarily just you just allow it to just flow from your pen.
You know what, Ginsburg?
Well,
go ahead.
This is Alexis in Los Angeles.
Yes.
For me, a first draft is a chance to just get out there, do whatever I want. There are no rules. There's no right way of writing a poem, but after that, the real work happens. You know, I edit and edit again and edit again. I always read my work aloud. I send it to a peer editor. She edits it, sends it back. I send it to a paid editor. She edits it. I send it back. It's a process. For me, it takes a long time before I'm happy with the poem. Sometimes, never.
Okay, great.
Anyway.
Thank you. Doug,
yeah,
what about you, sir?
Yeah, this is Doug in Connecticut. I also am the editor of Blink Inc., and a section editor for Pandemonium Press in the Bay Area. And I think that Alexis hit on a good point. Reading it aloud, you know, we're not talking Moby Dick here. You know, you can read it aloud. Carry it around in your pocket. If I'm looking at a submission and I really can't decide, I carry it around with me, and I just read it aloud to myself three or four times during the course of the day. Sometimes I have to carry it with me a couple days. But reading it aloud, you really get the nuance, you get the cadence, you really pick up what the words feel like. That's a really crucial part.
Anyone else?
I agree up to a point. I mean, I think some poems happen that way, or stories, or ideas, and some don't. I think as long as you get the ideal down and put them in like a folder and then get them all out at the same time, and you might pull one from one poem and one from another and one from another. But like Ginsberg said, you know, he said first thought, best thought, and I don't agree. And I think that you should think about them a little more than just first thought, but sometimes you get them right at first. But like Bukowski has on his grave, don't try. What exactly does he mean? You know, I kind of think that, well, I'm getting up there in age. I think I'm older than anybody here. Or maybe Doug and me are about the same. But anyway, I think that a writer has to write something that he likes, because he has to be the best audience. He has to be the most important audience. And if he likes it, you know, somebody else will. And if they don't, well, at least you like it, you know. I think writing, especially in a small press, you're not going to make a lot of money at it, and probably won't ever make any money at it. But it's cathartic, you know. It's like a diary, you know, that with your mind, with your soul, and you're getting it out there, and then years later you come back to it and I say, man, I really like this, but you know what? I think I'd like to change it now. That can happen too. Okay, Okay, you want some new stuff?
Yeah.
Hey, fantastic. Here's some new stuff I just been writing here. It's kind of up there. This one's called Cherry Blue Adios. It says, hey, pretty mama, let me help hang your clothes on the line. We can get some mojo herb and cherry wine and lay up and have a good time. I listen for the train to call my name out into the mystical rain. A magic fist holds the edge of the night. I just want to see the mountains in the early morning light. That was just a little shorty. Okay, here's one that I kind of like even better. It's called While My Raging Typer Bleeds. A zillion ways to die in a funky, junky world. Horses in a snowstorm trapped by a mirror ghost. Shapeshifters chasing vampires in the quicksand. Russian tumbleweeds, trouble and bad luck. Sharks eating lions in the Sea of Cortez. Spanking a guitar like a naked, nasty lady. A chicken-fried butthole of biblical proportions. Cranes sailing above the Danube on a Siberian wind. Stealing minds and money. In the name of the Lord. Okay. I like that one pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that too. That's good.
This one's called McSatan Burgers. I have this I had this guy, his name is Quick. The guy I grew up with, his name was Danny Quick. He got the name because he could beat you up real quick or steal your woman real quick. He had a brother named Blue who was an excellent drummer. Anyway, this one's called McSatan Burgers. Flipping burgers wasn't bad. Quick kept his eye to the keyhole and pen on the paper. A young chick was hustling cash with a religious scam outside the joint successfully. Every few hours, she'd go buy a half pint of cheap vodka for a jolt and come in for some coffee. She was in the bag more than usual one day and staggered in screaming about McSatan burgers. Quick took a burger to the end of the counter and called her over. He wiped himself on it and said, "On the house, sugar, and amen."
On the house, sugar, and amen.
Amen.
Who'd like to?
Here's one I like.
Who'd like to go next? You got
this one,
Catfish? Please.
I got tons, man. I got a whole shelf here. Besides what I gave to Amy in the university. It's called Rent-A-Dream. The lady in the yellow raincoat is naked underneath. She showed Quinn her treasures. It was like squirting him with lighter fluid and setting his heart and mind ablaze. Where are you going? Where have you been? Will you be my rent-a-queen? We don't have to be in love, although it might be nice. Let's walk into the darkness until the sun devours the light. I throw in a few rhymes every now and then lately. I don't know why I'm doing that, but I am.
You're very lyric, Catfish. You really are.
What?
You're very lyric. This is Amy. I've read a lot of your work already.
I'm very weird?
Lyric.
Oh, lyric?
Lyric.
I don't think so.
Yeah, the weird kind of goes without saying, you know.
Well, I think I'm
Here's
kind
a
of
piece
a curve,
of
man.
Here's a piece of poetry by Sarah Teasdale called I Am Not Yours, which might be a little opposite of what you just stated in terms of your piece.
Okay, cool.
I Am Not Yours by Sarah Teasdale, read by Exie Sam. I am not yours, not lost in you, not lost, although I long to be lost as a candle lit at noon, lost as a snowflake in the sea. You love me, and I find you still a spirit beautiful and bright. Yet I am I, who long to be lost as a light is lost in light. Oh, plunge me deep in love. Put out my senses, leave me deaf and blind, swept by the tempest of your love, a taper in a rushing wind.
Was that live or recorded?
Recorded.
Oh, I was going to say, man, there you had some reverb on there or something, man. That sounds pretty good, man. I like that. Okay, you want
sure.
me to go again, or you got something? You want to hit? Anybody else want to hit it?
Who else would like to share?
Sure, I will.
Yeah, we'll deal with Alexis.
Does that sound okay?
Alexis.
One more. Okay, this is called Lust at the Cafe Formosa. It's from my book, How I Lost My Virginity to Michael Cohen and Other Heartstab Poems, put out last year by Sybaritic Press. Excuse me, Lust at the Cafe Formosa. Once at the Cafe Formosa in L.A., I saw the most beautiful girl, and the best part was you could see she didn't know it yet, didn't know how anxiously her nipples strained against her shirt, or that her endless legs and slow-eyed gaze were worth $1 million to someone. She was a sway in the wind willow, her skin the pale of vanilla ice cream, her hair all shiny black, straight like an Asian girl's, thick as a mop. She was maybe 17, on the brink, so ripe, sex exuded from her pores. She leaned against the jukebox, fingering those quarters in her short pocket so they jingled like Christmas, the fabric between her thighs stretched to bursting. When her food arrived, the girl unwrapped the chopsticks, lifted Kung Pao chicken to her mouth, inhaled the spicy morsels. A long, soft, slick noodle played with her lips, and I longed to lick it off. I'd been alone 4 years by then, so used to it, even the longing had long departed. Then she showed up, all fresh, spangled, clueless. If I didn't walk out, then I never would. Elvis was crooning, "Don't be cruel," but I knew she would be. Girls like her can't help it.
Woo!
Nice.
Sounded
nice.
Like somebody was choking on that one.
Well, that Kung Pao chicken is pretty spicy stuff, you know, Michael.
Yeah, I thought, was that you choking, Michael?
Probably.
That was a good one, man. I really liked it. I read it before I got the book. Anybody want to discuss that one?
Well, Alexis,
go on to the next
about,
one.
Well, let me ask Alexis, huh? Talk about the themes of your work. I mean, the last two, there seemed to be a little theme. What is the theme of your work?
I write literary erotica, or I aspire to that. I write about sex as power, sex as politics, sex as an equal opportunity sport. I like people who take responsibility. I did want to say that I met Catfish because he and I kept showing up in the same internet literary journals and in print, and I kind of tracked him down and just fell in love with his work, and he has been a huge mentor to me. He has introduced me to countless great literary editors, including Doug. He has turned me on to so many people and things. He is a really great mentor, and I know he's done it for a lot of other people besides myself. So thank you, Catfish.
You're welcome, Alexis. Anytime.
Yeah, I'd like to echo that, too. Hey, Catfish turns me on to a lot of people. You're turning me on to virtual prose, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm good buddies now with him. He's just in New York, and we got some stuff cooking. And you just turned me on to Chang Ming out of Pacific Poetry.
He's
going to
be on
Vancouver.
The 29th, man.
Yeah.
He's going to read in Chinese and in English.
Cool.
Nice.
He took a bunch of my haiku for his magazine. He's got one called Pacific Poetica, I think, or Poetica Pacific or something like that.
Yeah, I think I read that. I think I read that recently, yeah.
Yeah, he's a cool guy, man.
Yeah, well, he and Alexis are both going to be in Blink, the big anniversary Blink issue 20 out this summer.
Cool.
Chan
really
Ming
fantastic.
And Alexis are both going to be in.
Good.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool.
I just
want
to say it's really fantastic that people have an opportunity to come together like this. I think this is one of the things that Blog Talk does is allow people from around the world to meet finally. I mean, publishing online is difficult as it can be, but it just provides a nice opportunity for people to come together and to share their poetic work and learn more about each other. I think this is beautiful.
Certainly.
I'm so glad Catfish is here.
The couple who were on earlier from Bunbury Magazine in the UK, Catfish introduced me to them, and they've been instrumental in helping to promote my magazine in the UK. We're seeing a real uptick in UK submissions at this time, and I have to attribute it to them.
Hey, they're good people.
Yeah.
Good friend. Okay, you ready for another poem?
Yeah.
Yes, this is your time. This is your time, yes.
A short time? Okay.
It's your time.
Oh, my time. Okay.
Yes.
This one's called A Sticky Summer. Sully had a champagne thirst, but Quick had a Mad Dog 2020 budget. She had a T-bone steak appetite, but he had a grilled cheese bankroll. Quick won a trip to the Great Wall of China, but had a fear of flying, so didn't tell anyone. He took Sally to the state fair. She tried to eat all the crazy stuff served on a stick. Bacon, spaghetti, duck, sauerkraut, salad, macaroni and cheese, beaver, python, bison, alligator, skunk, cougar, ostrich, kangaroo, eyeballs and testicles of all of the above. He told her all he wanted was kitty on a stick. She said cat and muttered some curse words under her breath. She grew furious. The yellow-red sun chinned itself on the gray horizon. She split in the night. I glanced in my closet, and all that was left was a bag full of right shoes. She'd taken me to the cleaners. Quick hoped she had listened and taken to heart when he explained the great deception of mirrors, smoke, and life, and how if you were ever arrested, you should defecate and urinate in their car, and they would instantly release you on your own recognizance.
Yeah, that work?
Yeah, if you try
it. Does. Oh, okay. Just
it might
you.
Work, I don't know. Never did it myself.
Yeah.
I think it'd work all the opposite, man.
Yeah.
Then they got to start playing with their little taser gun on your head.
Yeah. They take a left to the psych ward instead of the right to downtown. Yeah.
Right.
On that note, you know how I love these little short breaks. We'll be right back.
All right.
My name is Michael Ingram. I'm here in Washington, D.C. We've got some fabulous writers online, and we're featuring tonight Catfish McGarris. Let me ask you a question, Catfish.
All right.
Since you've been writing poetry, how have you changed as
a
result of
writing? How have I
changed?
I write poetry stuff.
Well,
how have you changed as a person?
As a person, I've had a lot of regrets about becoming a poet, especially when I used to go out and read all the time. I kind of neglected my wife and daughter, and I really made poetry more of a priority. The poetry scene has changed a lot because it always was, before the internet, it was all, mail out your poetry, and you had to have a self-addressed stamped envelope, and you're just hanging around the mailbox all the time. And you couldn't connect with people as fast or anything. I mean, a block show, come on, nobody heard of nothing like that. But as far as growing, I read all the time, so I know I'm more, as far as reading, and I made a lot of friends, but I wish I would have spent more time with my family. I really have. I think that's one of the worst things about getting caught up being a poet or a writer. If I could take it back, if I could do it all over again, I probably would turn my back on writing. I would never do it again, man, if I had to do it all over again. I mean, I'm coming up on 62 years, and I kind of lost touch with my daughter, lost touch with my wife, made a lot of enemies along the way, drank too much, but I don't know. It's got its good points, too, I mean, I don't drink anymore. I haven't drank for 11 years, so I got that behind me. But I have fun doing it, you know. I just consider it a hobby. I've never made much money at it at all. But
well, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I think the world would, I don't know what to say about your statement, especially in terms of the fact that you would have never wanted to do it again. You would never want to do it again if you had to do it over again.
If you love your family more than you love your writing, when you've got a beautiful wife of 32 years and a daughter that's going to be 27, and I could have done a lot more, man. I could have done a lot more. Could have done a lot different. But now I am. I'm not going out reading. I might do some reads sometime, but I'm going to have to be paid for it. And I don't know. It's fun, but was it the right thing to do to man up? I don't know. Never know, man.
It's true. That's a very existential question. What is right and what is wrong?
You can't take back your life, though.
No, you can't.
That's for sure, man.
Any other comment?
No, not really. Just, you know, I don't want to hit on a bad note, man. I'm glad that I'm a writer. I mean, and I'm glad that, you know, people know me and I meet good people, but still, it's got the downside too, man. You know, and people have to, I think the main word is prioritize, you know, make a priority of what's the most important to you. Don't become an addict to it, you know.
And well, I believe, based on what you've shared, that you're not hitting a bad note, that you're hitting a life note. I mean,
right.
Everyone has their own unique lived experience, their own story about their own way of being in the world. And I don't view it as being a life note. It's just viewed as you speaking and sharing your truth. And there's nothing wrong with it. I believe that's what poetry is. It's about a person being able to share his or her truth.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. Any comments? Any comments from the poetry section?
Family first. That's what I've learned over the years is family first.
There's
plenty of stuff I like, and there's stuff that I pretend I need. But, you know, as me and Catfish get on here, it comes right down to what do I really care about?
Right.
You know, I mean, no screwing around, not just something that's cool, but what do I really, really care about? And it comes right down to my family.
Yep, that's
right. You know, and that's it. That's what I got. It's what I care about. What matters.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
That's about it.
Yeah.
You ain't going to take it with you. That's why I got all my stuff in Marquette, man. You know, with Amy Carey. And the thing is, man, I mean, you're going to have, when you get up, after you've been doing this for a long time and you got some stuff, you need to get it in a university, you know. Get it.
Oh, yeah,
somewhere.
I agree. We're not making a big announcement about it quite yet, but to share with our little circle here, my publication, Blink Inc., and some of my stuff has just been archived at the Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library at Yale University.
You know what?
Congratulations.
At Yale University in the Beinecke, which, I mean, they have stuff going back, you know, 3000 B.C.
I tried Beinecke before Marquette. Something happened. They had like a killing there or something, and so they didn't accept my stuff.
I mean, they got stuff like they have something called the Piri Reis map, which is a Viking map that shows oceanic depths that could only have been done, like, you know, from the sky. So, you know, you want to come up with your Space Brothers conspiracy theory, you know, here you go, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and everything is in this huge, huge brick of glass, you know, with controlled moisture, humidity, light, you know, and it's just really something to see all these ancient manuscripts from all over the world, and it's just some gorgeous stuff. But anyway, I think getting archived is important simply because, you know, like we're all published online, we're all published a lot online, and it's such an ephemeral world. It's not even gone today to gone tomorrow. It's, you know, if you see it and you say, oh yeah, I really want to read that, and you know, by lunch it's gone.
No, Amy told me at last time I went to Marquette that the stuff online is just as important as the print stuff.
Oh, I agree.
And they put it right into your archives, man. I mean,
yeah, I agree. I mean, for years in other industries, I spent a fortune on magazine advertising, and they just end up in a stack.
Yeah.
You know, you got no kind of traffic with that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas online, you know, you were the one who turned me on to the place that, they archive dead websites.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was an amazing project. I really do.
Yeah, well, this is Amy. We do archive, we do have a service called Archive It that collects material from websites, and so that's one of the things that we're doing to collect what's going on online.
Nice.
And it's so important. You know, Catfish is really great about sending me links to stuff, sending me anything that he's, anywhere he shows up, he sends it right to me, and that is, it goes right into the mix to figure out how we're going to preserve it, because what we're concerned about is preserving it for the long term. We're concerned making sure that people can access this stuff, you know, not 10 years from now, not 15 years from now. We're talking about 50 years from now, 100 years. That's what we're thinking about.
And things change so much. I mean, I'm writing a blurb for the back jacket of a book that's going to be published out in, out in Western Canada. I guess it's published in Vancouver by a woman named S.K., and is a novel in three parts of the near future written in tweets. It's good. It's not a novelty. It's not a trick. It's, you know, it is well written. It truly is.
Cool.
And that will be coming out. I don't know. I forget who's publishing it, but it's going to be out, I think, this fall. Anyway, it's
technology has changed the world so much in terms of writing.
Well, it's changed, also, you know, it's changed how we talk.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, I work mostly in Flash, you know, very short fiction. What I publish is predominantly 50-word fiction. You know, and we've all worked smaller, worked bigger, you know, but, you know, it's just how we talk. It's how we communicate. And we listen to people, it's what they say, you know. It's all these little micro statements that we throw back and forth. It's kind of
neat.
That.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to write that down. Okay, who else would like to share? Who else would like to share?
I'm going to have to read one if nobody speaks up.
Yeah, read one, man.
All right. I don't know. I was going to do something. All right, this is going to be weird because we have to get a little mojo cooking here. I wasn't here for the sound check, so I hope this is going to work out. This is going to have a Greek chorus in it, and the Greek chorus is going to be of semaphore crabs, and they're going to be psychically communicating with our central character, who is lost on a spaceship that can never return to Earth. And this is kind of a riff off of Jonathan Latham's Chronic City, but anyway, here's one that has our psychic semaphore crabs. And I never imagined doing this one aloud. And then my friend Lynn Alexander, when she and I worked at Full of Crow together, she was out at Snowetry in Ohio, which is 150 continuous hours of poetry. And like everybody else, she ran out of stuff to read and started reading my stuff. And this is one of the things she read. So sorry, but I have to use castanets for the crabs. Hope that doesn't freak it out. Here we go. Night skies seen on razor edge, a dubious godly gift. Perfect vision, astronomic distances so clear. Sightless in close mangrove groves. An other focus, monsoon blur. Semaphore crabs never shunted. Information passed each day. Rotting marabou mouths. Beware, beware. Wicked waiters watching. Beware, beware. Sudden beak death near upon us. Silent cautions. Stillness now. Rest. Rest now unaware. Cadet Waxwing at her station, farpoint long departed, looping orbit long ecliptic from very far away. Panic is our news. Oh, danger is for certain. Danger now we see. Falling, falling, they are falling. No, falling fastly downward, very wrongly, plummeting homeward much too fast. Speeding orbiter now seems damaged. Did you see it? Look, look, double quick. Object impact? Hostile action? Mayday, mayday, in the sky, crew will soon all be burning. Frail and falling from so high. Sound a warning quickly. Fast, fast alarm now, please. Fading double image flickers. Off, then on, and off again. Sky breaks, they are screaming. Hull shudders long and groans. Atmospheric glancing bounce. Did you see her? Did you see her as she passed? Attent upon the helm so quiet in the vast? Pulsed in time, then back out, out, out. Green screen, they have saved her. Crew removed from peril now. Shut alarms now quickly, please. Orbit reestablished. Check for damage. What has happened? Ceramic hull cooling now. Mask discarded. Breathing slowly start. Porthole window. She is dreaming. Face pressed to the glass. She looks for with longing for her crab phones far below. The ocean is so blue. It's so blue today. She sings, song sings. So blue today. So very blue today, sings little Waxy. Did you feel it? She dreams now in the sky. Okay, that's my bit of weirdness.
What was that click, click?
That's my castanets.
Oh, okay, that was one of those little snappers?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, okay. I got a pair of plastic orange. I didn't know how to do it, so my wife got me some plastic castanets, and she drew crabs on them with a Sharpie.
Okay. That's nice.
Oh, you know, man, we got a budget here, you know. That's
right.
A special effects
right.
Budget for the year.
I think we have a caller from area code 256 who'd like to read. Am I correct?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. And your name is?
Wing Dog.
Wing Dog. All right. Welcome.
All right. Hey, Wing Dog. Wing, W-I-N-G, like chicken wings, the,
oh,
and then
wing.
Dog, D-O.
Wing to the
dog.
Wing Dog,
yeah.
Wing Dog, Wing Dog, Wing Dog. Okay, Wing Dog.
I'm going to read this piece. I wrote this piece in 2011, so it's kind of a little dated, but it's still. It's called My Pet Peeves. Persistent problem, pushy people, pathetic politicians, perverted pedophiles. I pull out paper pen and pensively, patiently ponder just where to begin. Persecuted, perplexed, pissed to the point that anger fills my pen. Perhaps I should be praising instead of preparing to pounce on society's ills, but with a program and a pencil to push, another day, another time, it's too late to chill. Because pistols are popping off like popcorn in private and public school halls. young pupils perambulate the playgrounds, peddling their parents' prescription pills to their peers. The principal punishing paddles, but it's the bullies the other kids fear. So sad, like Pete, even my pain is pissed. Perturbed people pumping gas, giving the Middle East a middle finger. And for what? Because they want a democracy? Helplessly, I watch my pension plan parachute up and down Wall Street while BP executives proudly pack fat profits in puffed-out pockets as oil prices continue to skyrocket. 3, 2, 1, lift off. Shit pisses me off. Not only the projected poor, Popo 5-0 is robbing Peter to pay Paul. Preaching, praising, praying, oh, how pleasant. The doors of the church is now open. On Sunday, pragmatic pastors preaching peace and prosperity, precariously packing pews are pretty princes and patent leather pumps, prissy hat-wearing women, impatient procrastinators in press-pleated pants, pesky, perky, porky kids, helping players on the prowl, pretending to be listening. Some on time, a few coming late, hoping to miss the passing of the collection rate. What? My pastor's pissed. While across town, ordained pedophiles in the pulpit praying, then praying like predators, while the Pope poked the masses with messages of absences, the bishop poked the backside of innocent little boys. Pitiful, freaking, pretentious perpetrators further pisses me off. Now, I know we all have the propensity to sin, but come on. And less than children, since when? And to these powerful, prejudiced, punk-ass politicians promoting privileged propaganda, poisoning their patron, attacking America's agenda by opposing the president, you got Peelhead Rush and other highly publicized professional personnel on prerogative Fox News Network acting like they ain't one enough, a United States resident. Well, politically speaking, it's my prerogative to be pissy. Y'all, these peas got me spitting puns, pros, and metaphors and spit on my paper. But anyway, I'm about to be finished, so please, please, be just a little bit more patient. Now, Pastor Pat, in particular, attitude is purposely not posted on my profile. A pessimistic person I perceive, I'm not the one, so people stop whining, please. And passers-by, if your post ain't positive, please pass your ass right on by me, and don't piss me off. Like purple panties paddling pink pussycats preventing perpetrating, cock blocking Miss Tampac, stopping the flow once a month, shutting down the sex store. Now my penis is pissed. Throbbing and raging to the point of premature ejaculation, hollering, I can't get no satisfaction. I can't even procreate. Damn it. I'm so pissed. And I'm passionately pissed off like a fire perfectionist. Psychotic psychopath, prophesying maniac, on the internet in the corner, ranting and raving like a child in timeout. Well, politely put, I'm fired up and fed up. That's just how much I'm pissed with these and a few other of my pet peeves. That's my piece.
That's pretty damn good.
Wow, that's something else. That's something else. Thank you, Wing Dog. That's something else.
Wing Dog. Wing Dog is one of the Tall Poetic's favorite poets who signs on every week. So welcome back, Wing Dog. Welcome back.
Oh, man, no problem. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I would have did this in one, but I don't know if I can get through that. After all those peas.
All right, then. We're going to come back. We've got about 5 more minutes here. We're going to take a little extended break, or we're going to come back and finish with Mr. Catfish McDarris, the man of the hour.
All right.
And we'll be right back. next night. We're here with Mr. Catfish McGuire, superstar poet. This is an extended version of our weekly show, usually it's 60 minutes, but tonight we could not contain Catfish in 60 minutes. We needed 90 minutes. So, Catfish, please favor us with one or two more poems. You are the 2015 Thelonious Monk Award-winning poet, and
yeah.
We'll give you a round of congratulations for that, an applause for that.
Thanks,
tell us about that particular award.
Well, that particular award was from Dr. Mary Ann Schilsnick from Washington, D.C. She's the one that put us in touch, and she's got a magazine. She's a teacher there at the college, and she had a little contest about Thelonious Monk, and I wrote a little poem about him, and I got a big, fat biography of him, book of him. Very interesting man.
Yeah, Marianne,
okay,
her blog is The Song Is.
Yeah.
One quick plug for Marianne. Her blog is called The Song Is. So
The Song
Is. Back to you, Catfish, to bring us home. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to read, your last buddy got away with some stuff, I'm going to read one and then I'm going to get away with one. Okay, I'll end with two. This one's called The Tumbleweed. Quick had a girlfriend. She was a nymphomaniac, which was outstanding, but she had a few faults that were difficult to overlook. She spoke with a hair lip and stuttered when excited. She had fat hands with pudgy fingers. Her worst problem was how hairy she was below the waist, like a gorilla or a werewolf. Quick said he had trouble. I told him what he needed was a bushwhacker.
Right.
Nobody laughed at that one.
All right. Catfish, continue on.
I'm laughing, Cat.
Hey, man.
I'm laughing all
the time. That wing dog or wing man, his was worse.
All right, Catfish, continue.
You know what? I was going to end with a bad one, but I won't. Okay, let's see here. I got one here. It's called The Last Poem. Well, since it's going to be the last poem, it's the last poem. Pretty clean. Quick went from a big flat. Okay, let me start over. The last poem. Quick went from a big fat rejection slip as a poet to an overnight success. He was compared to Dylan Thomas, Bukowski, Pablo Neruda, Lipo, Tufu, Ginsberg, and Corso. Audiences and publishers asked him how he memorized all of his poems. He said he learned them by heart. Quick knew he was a fraud, a big phony, and possibly a plagiarist. He'd wake up and the poems would be in his shoes. At first he thought he'd written them in his sleep, so he set up a camera to record his nocturnal writings. He saw the cats moving around, but he never rose from the bed. He was baffled. Quick only had to read the poems once, and they were recorded instantly. He was mystified and perplexed to the point of sheer madness. His two cats were the only things that kept him sane. The nervous breakdown hit him with a full hurricane-force panic attack. He was overwhelmed and plagued. As he was put struggling into the straitjacket and led to the ambulance, his cats shoved one last poem in his shoe, and this was it. That's it.
Catfish, thank you so much for joining us. Well, thank you, everyone, for sharing your poetry tonight. Catfish, again, for gracing us with your work, for bringing this all together. You're an incredible gentleman. I want to say to our listeners out there in poetry land, join us again next week on The Power of Poetics, where we continue this journey. So, again, to all of you, good night. Thanks again to Catfish McDarris, the man of the hour, and good night to everyone. Thank you so much. Let poetry ring.
Hey.
Good night.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Hey. Thanks, Dr. Michael. Bye.
Oh, yes, not a problem. Good night.
Good night, all. Bye-bye.